yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 15. Today our guest is professional card player and esports veteran, Faramir. He joins Greyboxer and I to talk about his life as a gamer and his competitive experience. We'll also dive deeper into some of the big changes the patch will bring and where the meta might go. All this and some Dimeridium Rage on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back, everybody, to Commander's Horn. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I am joined, once again, the dwarf to my elf, a proper Gwentleman indeed, Josh Greyboxer. How are you?
Oh, man, I am great. I am so excited for our guest on the show today and to get in our discussion about the news and the new patch notes and everything. For me, I've been playing my dwarves deck, featuring Zoltan, Yarpen, and all the rest of the well-bearded faction. Mahaka Monday was amazing this week. The deck actually worked pretty well. It's on Gwent DB as Mahaka Monday, and it includes a detailed guide on how to play.
Yeah. Buy your beard.
Buy my beard.
Buy your beard. Deck guides, always fun. I'm trying to write a few more myself. I've had a few days with the patch. I played mostly Elven decks. I played a little bit of Radovid here and there. I've, you know, explored some other decks just kind of off stream and stuff. A little bit of King Bran, a little bit of big monsters, like the high value monster targets.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The Elven deck, I think it's really good. I run Ethna as a leader. Yorveth, Isengrim, Bork, and Saskia are my gold. I believe in Saskia. I think she's a good card in this deck. There's a lot of things on the board usually. So many elves handle it. That's really a summary of how things are going for me.
So wait a minute. Is it Ethna or is it Anya? Because I've heard it as Anya as well. That's how King Blacktooth pronounces it.
I think there was footage of someone saying it's Anya, but I also know there was footage of somebody saying it was Ethna. I say Ethna, and I truly believe I'm correct, but I might not be.
Because Anya makes me think of that song. What is it? Like, far away, far away, far away. Right?
Yes.
Is that it?
We're dating ourselves, Josh. I don't think anybody
old.
Would know that one.
We're old people.
Anya, good stuff. Good song by Age of Electric as well.
So that sounds like a really fun deck. It's funny that we both picked Scoia'tael when neither one of us were really running much Scoia'tael in the prior patch.
Mm. I just like new ways to play decks, and I think that I had my fill of the pure stall Isengrim Bomb variation.
Did you get to do one of those pass with Toruvial on the board and have it like pop Aelirin out and put like 40 strength on the board with two or three cards?
I'm actually not playing Toruvial. I'm playing Kieran, but I'm not playing Toruvial.
Okay.
And I'm not playing Ciri, so I'm playing Kieran kind of for that use. But no Toruvial. I don't think Toruvial is necessary, actually. I think you can really just kind of dictate how the game goes a lot of the ways, just in your basic ways, through mercs and archers and removing and dropping Bork at the right time is really, I think, the name of the game right now.
Bork is fun to Scoia'tael because your units are always pretty low strength, you can kind of dodge it most of the time. So we've also, coming up on the show, we've got a great interview with Germany's Faramir. He's an ex-Hearthstone professional. He has attended premier tournaments, and he's won a few. He was almost top in the world at one point, wasn't he, Beard?
Very, very highly ranked on the Hearthstone ladder regularly. And yeah, definitely attended a number of premier tournaments that those who follow Hearthstone would recognize. We talk about that in the interview.
Oh, yeah. And he's a consummate professional, great guy to talk to. And we're really looking forward to sharing this interview with you. And the interview did, by the way, happen before the patch, but it did occur after the developer stream, which outlined all the changes in the patch. So we do go into quite a lot of the patch changes, so this is a very relevant interview.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there is a disclaimer here. It's not a bad disclaimer. Faramir is an ex-Hearthstone professional, so there's a lot of talk about Hearthstone, but it's in very general terms, the history of the game as it went through beta, just as Gwent currently is going through beta, and what those early tournament scenes were like. So we don't talk about Hearthstone in depth. We don't really talk about the game or cards, so don't let that turn you off of what will be a very interesting interview with someone who has competed at a very high level in digital card games. I think that's the takeaway there. So he's approached Gwent as a new player, like many of you have as well, so I'm sure you will enjoy it.
Yeah, and he has a very interesting perspective on the competitive scene for these digital card games, and a unique take on Gwent too. So we had a great discussion, and we do discuss quite a lot of Gwent in our strategy discussion with Faramir in the strategy section, which covers the biggest changes to the game after the patch and some of the new cards we heard about last week. Following that, of course, we'll kick off the community feedback section where we discuss and answer your questions from Twitter and emails.
So, and just so you know, Commander's Horn records on Wednesdays, posts weekly on Thursdays. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. If you've got a platform you'd like to find us on, let us know and we'll look into it. We're currently trying to figure out Acast. For some reason, it's not picking up our episodes, even though the feed was accepted, but we're working on it. Please send any of your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet us at commandershorn. We love reading about hilarious Gwent moments, suggestions for the show, guests you'd like us to reach out to, or you can just say hello.
So we've got a lot to get into today, so let's jump into the next section and talk about the latest Gwent news. So patch 8.25 went live on Monday, December 5th, bringing a host of changes. Is anybody else trying to figure out why it's 8.25? Whatever happened to patch 8.24? Or 8.23? I'm waiting on the patch that gives us every character voice dubbed by Shoop. But the patch launched Monday in Europe in the afternoon. So it was in the morning here in North America. So fortunately for me, it was just in time for Mahaka Monday. Early on the day, I got to check out some awesome streams where players were first discovering the delights of playing First Light with elven mercenaries and making a giant Isengrim board. And so while some of the existing cards were changed, such as Clear Skies into First Light and Drowner was mercifully modified, none of the new cards, Guard, Kairin, Dimeridium Shackles, etc., none of those were actually released with this patch. However, patch 8.2 is slated for release this year, which should include a total of 20 new cards, and, cross your fingers, ranked mode. Exciting times!
So excited for ranked mode, and obviously excited for new cards, and looking forward to doing the show where we just talk about the new cards. I've been waiting for that. The Passiflora tournament, a long-awaited tournament, has occurred. It took place over the 3rd and 4th last weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Congratulations to all involved, but the results have not been released yet. And why is that? That's because there will be a special broadcast this Friday on December 9th. It'll be an all-day event, I do believe, and Syraxia has recruited some shoutcasters to broadcast the finals, and we'll be broadcasting over compiled videos of the matches which have already completed. So we'll get a nice quality out of it. Your shoutcasters for Friday will be Shifu of the Cards, King Blacktooth, Delude, and me, McBeard. I'm excited to be a part of it, and I'm excited to see these matches for the first time. One thing that should be noted, the tournament was played in a previous patch, so the decks will not be the new hotness, but when it comes to high-level competitive play and great decision-making, that never goes out of style, and it will be very exciting to watch.
Yeah, and here's the thing. This is going to be a very unique Gwent stream. This is going to feature recorded videos of the top competitors in a very competitive tournament being shoutcasted by some of my favorite dudes. So I'm looking forward to watching this stream, and I actually, you know, we don't know the results of the Passiflora. They've been very hush-hush. The competitors have been instructed to be quiet until this stream, so we're going to have a lot of anticipation and some real reactions, I think.
And it's all in the name of providing a very high quality tournament Shoutcast. And while I have attempted to do it in the past, it was through screen sharing and Skype. And I think I got, you know, we got the point across. We got the information out there and we were able to do it live. But looking back on it, it's, you know, frame rate issues, graphical issues. So this will solve all of that. We just have to wait a little longer. It's worth the wait, though.
Oh, yeah, it'll be great. And I was able to stream the first few rounds of the tournament live, but I had to do it on delay, you know, to make sure that just in case anybody wanted to pop in and take a look at my hand. That's just something we all do. We put our streams on delay. But again, I don't know if it was that exciting because even though it was happening, it was still in the past. So I'm really looking forward to this presentation.
Me too. I'm very, very excited to do that cast with Delude and to catch the other cast with Shifu and King Blacktooth that is also happening on that day. One last piece of news. A lot of the greatest competitive players as far as the tournaments that we have seen recently started up a site. You can find it at Gwentleman.com. It's a collection of articles from tournament veterans and great players alike. And Greyboxer, you're a part of that as well?
Yeah, we're actually a competitive Gwent team. Not the first competitive Gwent team, but we're excited to be on Gwentleman.com, and it's actually an incredible website. A ton of work has went into this, so if you like the show, you might like Gwentleman.com as well.
Yeah, great articles can be found right there, and there is some great discussion that is already happening on those articles. Very smart stuff in there. Get involved, check out that site, Gwentleman.com, and yeah. Outside of that, it was a bit of a light news week. I mean, the patch dropping is huge news, but we did cover a lot of that last week. But that's okay, because we've got a nice long chat with Faramir, and we're going to get into that right after this quick break. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Today we are joined by esports veteran, professional card player, and all-around great guy, Faramir. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Well, that's quite the intro. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Welcome to Commander's Horn Podcast.
Glad you had me.
Well, I mean, we ran into each other on the ladder, right? And I had gotten about halfway through the game before I looked at the name of my opponent, and I thought, I know that name for sure. And then after the game in which I was beaten by you, I remember sending you a tweet saying, GG. And then you started showing up in my stream, and we played in a couple other show matches on the stream, and it just kind of came together that you'd be willing to be on the podcast, and I think that that's fantastic. So thanks so much for your time. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Like, it's been a while since I've done a podcast, but those are always fun, so...
Yeah, I think I've also run into you on the ladder before, too, and I was like, this is going not so great for me. you punch above your weight. Ever since the beginning of the game, I bought some kegs and I've had a pretty strong deck. And I've seen you play pretty well with maybe a deck that you didn't spend a ton of money on.
I have spent no money on the game so far.
Yep, you're free to play and you're excellent. And you're beating both of us.
Well, you know, it's like... I'm not gonna say I built all those decks myself, right? I had a couple of years in my stream which said, you know, these cards are good and stuff. So I tried it out. I kind of figured it out. I watched some streams. I watched your streams after you contacted me, right? After you tweeted me. So I watched like some of the, like, I watched Chaotic Priest stream, who's streaming like quite a lot. So that's quite interesting. I'm seeing a lot of decks and just trying to figure out the playstyle. So.
Well, we do like to know, like, who is Faramir? I mean, who are you and what's your gaming history?
I played Hearthstone professionally for like 3 years after I got into beta. The whole esports thing kind of started with League for me, like League of Legends, because I watched a lot of it, like season two, season three, quite a while ago now. It's like, what, 4 or 5 years ago now? And yeah, I watched that. No, it was never good enough, so I couldn't play that. But then I got a beta key for the Hearthstone closed beta, and I started playing that, and I thought, man, you can play some tournaments with this. And I think I peaked around like end of 2014. I had my best rating, so to speak. Like, I was like top 5 in the world for a little bit. And
not bad.
That was fun, attending a lot of events like all around Europe, and yeah, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, I played The Witcher 3 around, like, I don't know, a while ago, and I love the in-game game, right? I love that game. So I was like, they're coming out with a game. I signed up for beta first day.
Oh, that's awesome. So as someone who was, you know, incredibly good at Hearthstone, and someone who is interested in playing The Witcher 3, is just a great game on its own. How excited were you to find out that the mini game was cards, and it was so, I mean, I guess it's not similar to Hearthstone, but how excited were you for it to be a card game?
Yeah, it's not similar at all, actually. It's quite interesting. It's quite different, so.
Yeah.
And I like it because of that. It's just a fun game, so I enjoy playing it.
Yeah, excellent. And I'm actually just curious. I asked this of people, like, before League of Legends, before, like, esports. I used to play League of Legends as well. I think it's really cool how esports has sort of really blossomed from that game, has really kind of gotten its claws deep into what esports is today worldwide. So I think it's very much a catalyst to how we appreciate esports. But before that, even, like, did you grow up playing Super Nintendo, or did you grow up playing, like, what games kind of shaped your tastes of today? Like RPGs, was it maybe action games, or did you not play very much perhaps when you were younger?
Well, I definitely played a bunch when I was younger, but I never had a console. When I went to play a console, I went to my friends, right? Or I played a bunch of Pokemon. That was basically what I played. I had a Game Boy and played a bunch of that. And then I got older, I played more PC, right? It was like basically the only platform we had was PC, so.
PC Master Race.
Yeah, exactly. And my favorite kind of game is like RPGs, right? Like Witcher 3. Like, I love those kind of games. It's like the stories, like one of my favorite franchises is Assassin's Creed. I love the gameplay, I love the stories. Like, especially if it's like set in a history setting, because I'm quite interested in that. So yeah, basically just play games for the story mostly.
Was Hearthstone your first card game?
My first online card game, sure. But like, I always loved playing cards, and like, it's a bunch of German card games I play. And I'm not a great poker player. I'm actually a terrible poker player, but my whole family loves playing cards, like loves playing board games and stuff like that. So,
oh, cool.
Came naturally.
And so you came from RPGs and started Hearthstone, and then became top 5 in the world. That gives me a little bit of hope, because Gwent actually is my first online card game as well. So for you to do what you've done with Hearthstone, playing basically what I used to play, RPGs most of the time, and Assassin's Creed and that kind of thing. For me, it was Mass Effect, but yeah, so this is awesome.
Yeah, there are some games that I would like to play, but I can't because I don't have a console, you know, like Uncharted or whatever. Like, I love those games, like, watching those games on streams, but, like, I can't play them because I don't have a PS4.
So cool.
Those exclusive titles are pretty cool. It's true.
So Gwent's going to have its own RPG, kind of like single player, as well, too. So it's going to be even more Witcher for you to sink your teeth into.
Well, I don't know how it's going to be. Like, it's not going to be like Witcher, right? It's not going to be an RPG, right? It's going to be like a campaign.
I think they're going to take some lore out of the books and make some new storylines that they could never really kind of explain you were just following Geralt for the whole thing. But it seems like they would probably take it in the same vein as Hearthstone's adventure mode. But I have a feeling it's going to feel much different than that, just because CD Projekt Red seems to be kind of taking every opportunity to differentiate itself from other popular card games. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. I also played Hearthstone for a lot of time, and that's actually where I recognize your name immediately. And I'm curious, actually, so you said you started playing smaller tournaments and that helped you break into professional esports. Is that how you broke into esports, just by just making a name for yourself in tournaments and on the ladder? Like, were you contacted, were you invited, or did you just have to apply over a number of events?
It's been a while, but like, I played small tournaments and I got into small teams, and there was a while where I placed really highly in like open tournaments, and that was when those still mattered, right? And I placed highly in a bunch of open tournaments, and I got picked up by smaller teams. Yeah, back when online tournaments still mattered, I had a good run, placed highly in a couple months, so I got recognized, and I got some high ladder finishes as well. And then in my career, when I went to like LAN events, I never did really well at LAN. The best thing I got was like top 8. But
so, at what point were you finding yourself at like the more marquee events, like Seat Story, and I believe you were at you've participated in DreamHack. Is that correct?
Yeah, multiple DreamHacks. Yes, it's a big open tournament. But yeah, I got invited like around end of 2014. I got into a bunch of online tournaments. Got invited there. Got invited to IM, but only I lost in top 16, so I never got to the offline portion.
So at this point, are you still competing at a high level, or are you taking a break to play some Gwent? What are you up to?
I haven't played Hearthstone since I retired, so I had like a short time at the end where I really like playing again, because I just competed at a high level again, which is a lot of fun by itself. It doesn't really matter what kind of game you play, like it's like a competition that keeps you up. Which, like, I've always been a competitive person, and like that always tickles me. So I had a lot of fun. I placed top 16 in the spring preliminaries. So I just lost to Oskaka and Crane. So that was pretty close. I almost qualified for the spring championships in California, whatever it is, for top 8.
This year you're talking about, or is this
this year? Yeah.
So for us, the biggest reason why we're so excited to have you on the show. You're playing a little game we happen to like quite a lot. How are you enjoying the Gwent beta?
I'm enjoying it quite a bit, actually. Like, I've been playing a little bit, not as much as other people, obviously, and I'm trying to keep it like free to play right now. So yeah, I'm just pretty casually playing it at the moment, trying to grind some more cards. You know, that's just basically what I'm doing. Watching some streams, it's just interesting.
And your faction of choice right now is Skellige, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's the one class I built because. That's kind of what I kind of like the playstyle. Like, it's kind of what I watched at the start and just kind of played. And then just, I don't know, I got some tips from my chat when I streamed some Gwent. And they told me, yeah, that's good. You need these and these and these cards. And I just crafted them. And I was like, okay, I'm kind of committed now to this class. So I just got to make it work at this point, yeah.
I don't know what you think about this, Faramir, but if and when Gwent becomes a competitive esport, what is a path you think CD Projekt Red should take to make Gwent a popular but also fair and competitive esport?
It can be quite a difficult game to pick up because it's quite a different playstyle from other card games. Like, you know, a lot of card games are like you have a health pool you need to fight down from your opponent, right? And you play cards to do it, and you draw cards and stuff like that. So this card game is quite different. I don't think it's going to be a big esport. I don't think there's a big, like, I think it's just going to be a little scene, and that's fine. I think it's totally fine. And yeah, there's going to be some tournaments. We're going to have some fun, but I don't think it's going to be like a gigantic esport.
Well, I think when you stand next to Hearthstone, that's obviously a really tall order. But I do believe that, I mean, just going by like the Witcher name and kind of what the Witcher has been to video games over the past couple of years, so specifically with Wild Hunt, but also just with the franchise in general, just kind of getting more and more beloved with each release, I would like to think that they would be able to put enough marketing behind this. And I think that accessibility might be a concern for them. So maybe they can bring the accessibility a bit brighter. And again, it's really, we're talking about like if they can even reach like a percentage of Hearthstone's success, that still would be hundreds of thousands, if not maybe a million plus people. That's what I would like to see. Obviously, I think it's really going to matter on, I think the marketing is going to be a big thing. And I think that general viewer interest is going to be a big thing. I think it's too early to say though, personally. I think we're in the closed beta and we're very close to it, but there are people like that could be further away observing it and maybe not see what we see. I don't know. I think that the developers are working so hard and they're so in touch with the community for it to be anything less than something exciting to look forward to. I want to compete more personally.
Well, and I wondered, since we are very early in a closed beta test, there's not a whole lot of people, but we've already had 5 tournaments already. We have another one planned this weekend. I wonder, comparing that to the way Hearthstone started, Faramir, you were there in the beta in Hearthstone. What was it like? What was the competitive scene like in Hearthstone during the beta? Was there a lot going on, or was this a grassroots thing? Because right now we have Gwent fans creating their own tournaments. Was Blizzard more involved during the beta in creating tournaments, or what was the scene back then?
Blizzard never meant this to be an esport, right? They never had a big esport other than like Warcraft Arena and stuff like that. And Hearthstone was never meant to be an esport, but it got so big and there was such a huge casual audience that they just thought like make a bunch of tournaments, right? Blizzard never was that involved at the start, but it was like, because there was such huge interest by players, ESL and like Zodak and a bunch of those organizations started making cups. Like,
I remember Fight Night hosted
Fight Night, obviously. Fight Night was a big thing. I don't even know if that was sponsored. That was like before my time even. Like that's what I watched, right?
Yeah, and then they shut it down.
Shut down Manic, right? Feels bad. And then shut down by then as well.
So that gives us hope then, because it seems like that it was a community-driven thing. When it first started,
yes.
It was about the members of the community who wanted to push this and push it into a competitive esport, being Hearthstone. So it's possible for Gwent to have that same thing as long as the developer later backs that up. And that's what Blizzard has done. I mean, at this point, there's an extraordinarily supported esports scene with Hearthstone, and I hope, even if it is a lot smaller in scale, that Gwent has the same thing.
So listen up, everybody. If you want the Gwent esports scene to be something that you visualize, it's in our hands. It's in our hands.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Exactly. I'm saying there's a chance.
We did see that they had a ranked mode and a leaderboard that's going to be coming in the next patch, and basically a revamping of everything that we have seen so far. Now you actually achieve like a number value of experience. It's not just like a set amount of a bar per win, and it looks like there's going to be leaderboards coming as well. So it's as if we can actually transition right now, and we can talk about some of the changes. Faramir, you watched the stream yesterday from CD Projekt Red. Did you catch that?
I actually did not. I didn't have time to watch it, but I looked at the patch notes.
Let's talk about some of the changes, and we'll keep you updated. We'll explain everything as you may have missed the live stream yesterday. But we'll talk about that just after a quick break. We'll go into our strategy section after this.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
Okay, so as we have heard, lots of changes are incoming for Gwent. We saw many of these changes in the live stream. At the time of this recording, that stream was yesterday. We covered some of it live, but we've had some time to think about it, had some time to let that marinate in our minds. I would like to just kind of open up the floor as to what the biggest highlights from the revealed information would be. Now, Faramir, you weren't able to catch the live stream, but you have done some reading. Is there anything that stands out to you just in what you've read that you think is going to be your highlight so far from the incoming information?
Yes, they fixed a pretty game-breaking bug, and it's called a drowner. Because until this point, the drowner wasn't immune to rain. Like, come on, it's called a drowner. Just like it's immune to rain now. And yeah, just... Serves a purpose. Other than that, obviously the promote changes are like gigantic. I feel like that makes the Dimeridium Bomb pretty strong. It's probably going to be an auto include in some decks, mm-hmm. or like most decks actually, because it just counters the whole promote things to make him untouchable, right?
Do you think it'll suppress the attack? And we'll talk about Dimeridium Shackles for sure. We'll talk about that in a little bit more depth in just a moment. But just as a quick one-off, do you think that the card, especially being a common bronze card, do you think that it has the ability to like suppress the meta so much that everybody would be afraid to play the cards that Dimeridium Shackles will counter?
I actually think Dimeridium Shackles is quite a bad card, to be honest. At least the way I understand it, because the way I understand Dimeridium Shackles is it's not a silence. Like someone suggested, you play a Bork and you play a Dimeridium Shackle on it, and then just the effect doesn't work.
It's not how it works, no.
Yeah,
the standard effect's still true.
I just think it sets the card back to base strength and puts like, I don't know, if you have like, take a Reaver Hunter for instance, right? You have like a, I don't know, a six, you have all your three Reaver Hunters on the board, and their base strength is 4, right? And you play a Dimeridium Shackles on one of them, and I assume it just goes back to 4, and yeah, all the buffs and everything, and it reverts gold, right? So, or reverts gold to like silver or whatever.
Yeah, there are circumstances like that where the card is going to be worth 2 value.
Yeah, I don't think this is a very good card, because it's a Dimeridium Bomb on a single target. And it might be good in decks that just buff your own cards a lot and still want to have some kind of way to counter strong buff cards. So there might be a good option for it to include it into a deck, but I don't think it's going to be like a big deal, especially because the whole promote the whole buff and then promote strategy got kind of nerfed this patch. So
yeah, so I think the intention there was to get rid of that whole not very fun aspect of playing against Northern Realms where they'd buff something into Oblivion and then promote it. This card will remove the gold status of the card.
I think it has the demotion effect going with it too, though. Dimeridium Bomb won't be removing gold status, but this one will. So it's unlike Northern Realms, Northern Realms was really the only faction that could do something like that, remove gold status from a card. Now that's open to all factions. So I think that's probably a pretty big change in the kind of threats that you would be up against in any given deck. So I think that's probably something worth noting.
That's actually quite interesting. You can use it on your own cards, right? So you can,
yep.
I think this card's going to be like, I didn't even consider that, right? You can just demote like an Igni and just decoy it back to your hand and play it again, or just res it next turn with a silver res or whatever, right? That's pretty pretty good actually.
There's really only like what, 3 or 4 gold cards this is really going to hurt. It's gonna hurt Lugos. It's gonna hurt the new Kairin card. It's going to hurt who else buffs themselves and is gold and has low value.
Yeah, anything that like applies like a large self buff to it but otherwise isn't strong itself.
Buffed, promoted Northern Realms units are going to get wrecked by that card.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a viable strategy anymore.
I agree completely.
I think just the presence of the card in the game is going to make it. People just won't play that because if it's in the game, if there's a counter, there isn't a counter now. That's why it's so strong.
I like this card for the reason that you can use it on your own units. I think it's a really good use for it. There is only a handful of gold cards that it, you know, would really, really be a hard counter to. It also lets you choose, kind of like Geralt Igni lets you choose what you want to scorch. So in that way, I feel that it's actually stronger than Dimeridium Bomb, because you can choose what you want to have the effect on. Let's say you've wounded everybody on the other side, but your Skirmisher is at 19 base strength, but is currently frosted. You can use this card on just your Skirmisher and bring him up to 19, whereas with Dimeridium Bomb, it would almost reset the whole board, and that could actually be to your... It could hurt you.
I would disagree with you saying it's better than Bomb, but I think it's going to be a good situational card. Like, I don't think it's going to be like you're going to see more than one or two copies in like any given deck. Like, it might be a one-off in a deck. I don't think it's going to be like you're just going to auto include 3 of these cards.
Yeah, they won't provide full value if you have all 3. There's not going to be 3 good targets in a game for it.
Exactly.
I think what they're going to have to continue to do, actually, is keep creating cards like Kairin and like Madman Lugos that are very strong gold cards that have potential to reach very high buffed strength. So cards like this remain relevant to be a tech choice against them. Otherwise, it's just the presence of the card will make it so nobody ever runs those cards, no matter how strong they are. So they're going to have to keep making reasons to want to run strong gold cards or want to run counter to those gold cards. So the balancing act there, I think, is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a good tech choice, and like especially right now the tournaments, right? You play normal like different classes, best of 5s, best of 7s, right?
Depends on the format, yeah.
But like I think Gwent is a good game to play a single deck format with sideboard. I think that's a great game where you just and I think that's a good card for that kind of format.
Yeah, it would be definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of great tech choices, which is good. I'm glad that they're kind of providing the answers to the stuff that's most threatening. Yeah, and it does feel a little bit more like in Magic the Gathering, for instance, cards that have flying are very dangerous because you cannot stop them from hitting your hero or yourself, I should say. So you would tech in on a sideboard something that could, I believe the keyword was reach, where you can actually stop the flying creatures from hitting you. And that's really the only good thing about a minion with reach. But a minion with flying is always good. So they had to always have the answers on hand just in case somebody tries to get you with flying creatures, just as a completely almost off topic note, but I think that it's still relevant to talk about with sideboarding.
Yeah, I think when it's more similar to Magic than it is to Hearthstone. just because deck size is variable, right? You can. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's pretty good to be able to, like, you don't draw cards, but you can build decks differently, and you can take in a bunch of cards to make. And the classes are strong enough that you can counter each other with their given cards. And I think after they implement new cards and just more cards, and then maybe a new class is coming, right, with Nilfgaard. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a fun format to explore.
All right, so I'm going to go back to my highlight for the revealed information, and I'll keep it quick. So my highlight for the revealed information, I think, is probably the changes to the Skellige leaders. And I think that the Skellige leaders were, I felt like the cards that the faction had were quite good, especially before the patch when they were very, very good. But they're still quite good. But I felt that the leaders were very mediocre when compared to the other leaders. When your best hero was Kraken Krait, who can just summon 2/5 wounded units, and your other two choices were Bran, who lacks card advantage, and Harold, who could barely ever get value out of his ability. It seems like they're trying to bring them up a little bit, so there's more choice in Skellige, because I just felt like Croc could pilot any style of deck better than the other two. So I think I'm excited to play more Skellige now after the patch, including all the changes to the units, but that's my highlight. What about you, Josh?
Well, for me, there's a lot of changes that I'm incredibly excited to try out, and there's a lot of changes that I have been looking forward to. So one of those is waiting to see what they were going to do with Ockvist, because I like my dragon cards. I'm a big fan of Bork. I'm a big fan of Ockvist. They buffed Mrtabraka, which is great, but personally I love the Ockvist buff. Ockvist is a neutral 4-strength dragon that has a 5-round timer that has been reduced to 4. After 4 rounds, Ockvist returns to your hand and reduces all strength on the opposing side of the board by 1 per unit. Of course, that only affects non-gold cards. So, for me, this is a really cool change. This makes him a bit more effective. It was really hard to get full use out of Ockvist, because you'd have to go at least 5 turns into a round to get him back. And then, if Ockvist came back, then you might still be down on points, so you just, you know, have to play something else. So with it being 4 turns, you can just try to play him for card advantage, and I really like that change. That was something I was looking forward to.
So you are the Brian Kibler of Gwent, is that what he's saying?
He loves the dragon master.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. I had never thought about that comparison.
Yeah, it's awesome.
No, I like the change as well. Like, I've seen some decks playing it, Ockvist, just in round one, like trying to get card advantage with it.
So we talked a little bit about the ranked leaderboards as well, so I don't think we need to revisit that too much, unless we had any other things that we wanted to say about ranked leaderboards. And
no, there's not too much information out of it on it yet, right? It's like,
yeah, we just kind of had a picture, really, from the stream. So we do know that you are going to get experience on loss. We do know that there is going to be a 4-digit, or however many digits you can have, number that represents your skill. It's basically a viewable MMR, which I think a lot of games shy away from that kind of stuff, but it looks like they want to put that up there. They want to definitely recognize everybody. So you can just say, hey, I'm an 8,000 MMR player, and here I am on the board, and you can see it. So
it's funny, because that's an incredibly cool aspect of the ranked leaderboard for Gwent, because people are always above 8,000 MMR if you ask them.
But you can check now.
You can check it now, yeah.
Get on my level.
Are you over 9,000? Who knows? Nobody's over 9,000 in this picture, so.
Yeah, one thing I want to make sure, and they did mention that it would be seasonal, and I think that's great, because if you have a bad stretch, your win-loss ratio isn't going to haunt you forever. From the stream, it seems like that's what they're going to go with. I personally like ladders. I want CDPR to actually pay attention to the ladder and promote those top players and recognize them, maybe, you know, having a global leaderboard or having a series that these players are invited to would be really awesome. It'd be a good way to appreciate the players who are working their way to the top of the ladder every season.
Yeah. One thing I'm seeing here is, like, you have, like, leaderboards and with decks, right? I'm pretty sure that's going to be a leaderboard overall as well, right? And that's how they're going to determine who's the best player or whatever in that season anyway. I'm going to be interested in how long a season is in Gwent. Like in Hearthstone, it's 1 month, right? You have 1 month a season.
Yeah.
I'm interested in how much it's going to be in Gwent. It shouldn't be much longer than that. I feel like, I always think like a month is a little bit short. I think maybe like 2 months, something like that.
I wonder if we'll have time to actually try that out during the beta.
I would hope that we have. I think what's probably going to happen is that whatever we get in the next patch, assuming that this is something that comes in the next patch, the rank leaderboard specifically, if it will just be until the next patch cycle, and then the next patch comes in whenever it comes, and then it'll wipe. That's what I'm predicting. I think that a month, as I also have Hearthstone experience, sometimes those months would feel very long and sometimes those months would feel very short. It kind of really depended on what was going on in my life. But there are definitely some times where I was making a real push where I just kind of ran out of time. And I just wished for just one more week would have been so great for me.
The way I used to play was I just got Legend first week and I didn't play for 2 weeks and then just try hard at like the last week for a good spot on the ladder. That's just kind of
definitely not a tactic I can play. Had to get to Legend first.
That's overrated anyway.
It's fun. I had a couple of friends that hit it. I had a 9-to-5 advertising gig, so it was hard for me to find
now
the time.
Now you have a new friend who had also did Legend. There you go.
Oh,
you have legendary friends.
Good. I need more legendary friends in my life, I think. Oh. I think we all do. I think we would all benefit from having legendary friends.
We didn't even have to find them in a keg.
That's how you qualify. You say, here's my friends, and these are my best friends, and these are my legendary friends.
These are my rare friends. These are my epic friends. These are my common friends.
We all have some common friends.
We all have some common friends, I hope, believe me.
These are my gold friends. These are my...
I think we all know some vendor trash that we hang out with as well, but it's good to have some legendary friends.
It's rough.
Oh, man. Thank you for that. All right. So let's keep talking about some of the things that are changing. We covered a lot of the Dimerdim Shackle stuff, so I don't think we need to really keep going over that again. But another huge change, I think, and these are what I'm calling the marquee changes, is the change to Clear Skies. Clear Skies, a valuable card in a weather meta, a dead card otherwise, is no longer a dead card because it has an additional effect. If you do not want to clear the weather, you can now play it as a rally card, which will pull a bronze unit from your deck and play it.
Now, this is not a Subaru rally car. It's a rally card. And it plays a random bronze from your deck. I think on yesterday's podcast, I may have said you can choose, and I don't know why I said that. Probably because hashtag live show.
Live show, hot takes. it's basically, I think it works like a Priscilla with a single choice, which is not a choice at all. But
dance parties.
So yeah, it pulls. So when there's nowhere there to clear and you have it in your deck, you can now basically pull any bronze card out of your deck that's not out of your hand. And play it randomly. But I think that this is a really good change. It definitely makes the card something that you would... It nerfs weather in that it makes people put this card in their deck more often because there's less risk. There's far less risk of it just kind of being in your hand against, Henselt, who doesn't traditionally run weather. So... that's how I feel. I feel like it's kind of like how Dimerdim Shackles, the presence of it in the game may change people's decision in their deck building. I think because this card is in the game, but it's unfortunate that the weather play comes mainly from one faction, Monsters specifically, they may hurt the most from this card being as good as it is. What do you guys think?
Well,
the Monsters might also benefit from the rally.
Mm-hmm.
So, conversely, we talked about running a value Monsters Dagon deck. Well, here you have it. You can actually have a bonus rally as your leader ability if you really need it. Can pull Wild Hunt Riders and therefore thins your deck. I mean, there's a couple of ways you can use it if you play the odds right.
I think the rally portion of this card is really strong. Like, it's just thins your deck, as Josh said. It's like, you play Pirates and Skellige for that reason, right? You play the Pirates to burn three cards and just get closer to your bigger cards. that you need or that when you need the game, basically, right? And the good thing about this card is you can just play it now. If you know your opponent's not likely to play weather, you just play it and thin your deck, and for your turns you have a bigger chance to draw a more relevant card. So this is actually quite interesting, and I think right now a lot of people don't have it figured out yet, like to keep track of the cards they still have in your deck. But like that's the, if you hold on to Clear Skies, for instance, and you really need a card, like you really need a bronze card, or you even need a card that's still in your deck at the end of the game, and you know you're not going to draw it, or your chance is lower of drawing it if you still have that bronze card in the deck, you can just play that instead of the weather part, like instead of the Clear Skies part, you can just play the rally part and try to get another card from your deck. I actually think rally is going to be played much more often than the Clear Skies part of that card.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and I think that you can probably doctor your mulligans a little bit. So if you had a number of rallies in your hand, like Wild Hunt Riders, for instance, maybe you mulligan them all away, and you play the percentages on if you can rally the Wild Hunt Rider out, and you can get all three of them out of your deck without ever holding one in your hand. But I mean, it's kind of the same thing if you were just to keep one, I suppose. As
or medics in Northern Realms, you know,
or the medics in Northern Realms.
Because you don't know if you have any.
Yeah. Let's move on to another huge change, the late game bombs. So Madman Lugos and Isengrim were wanted posters were up for these cards generally. The developers said they didn't like cards coming down as a last card that just got you 30 strength and won you the game if you happen to have card advantage and your opponent really couldn't answer them. So now these have changed. Madman Lugos still does the same thing, gains one strength for each card unit card in the graveyard, but there's a two turn countdown timer before that activates, and he just sits as a far less madman until it finally does trigger and he gains all the strength. Isengrim now generates neophytes on special cards played while he's on the board, as opposed to generating them after the fact, so you need to play him earlier. I think that these changes are great. I think that it's important not to have really, 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 really powerful cards that are just designed to be held, and then you build your entire deck around building card advantage for that specific purpose. I feel like it makes it a little bit less interactive. Faramir, do you have an opinion on this one?
I think they found a really good way to deal with these cards. Like, I think Lugos is still viable. I think Gravehag got the same treatment, right, with the two clock timer, the two turn timer. I think they found a really good way, because the biggest problem of these three big bombs was Isengrim, obviously, because Skoytel is so good at generating card advantage in the second round if they won the first round, or like even if they didn't win the first round, they're just so good at abusing special cards like Decoy and everything like that to gain the card advantage that Isengrim was just too strong, because you always have card advantage. It's always the last card. You always know you're going to lose, you know. It's like just one of these things that you just can't play around. And yeah, I think they found a good balance with these changes to these cards. Mm-hmm. I think Lugos is still going to be a viable card, for instance, because you know, okay, you got to have like three rounds in the last round, basically like three turns to make it viable. But it's actually not that bad of a card, because you know, let's say your opponent is short on cards and still has a Dimeridium bomb and kind of saved that for Lugos, but like he has to play it before the timer ticks over and you get the buff, right? So it's actually quite interesting how they change it, and I think I'm actually quite happy with it.
I predict that you'll be playing, or people will be playing Lugos earlier on, and just be happy with it being 15-ish, I think, and just taking that value as a gold card, and maybe using it. You probably might still want to play it in round three. Obviously, far more units here in your graveyard, but it'll start to be more of a question of greed. Like, is it really important for my Lugos to tick over to 22, or will he play as like a 17 in a very busy round two, or the early round three, or even after resurrections occur in round three? Yeah. If that's still something that Skellige relies on.
Yeah, I think it's an early round three card for sure.
Yeah, early round three, late round two, if you've won round one and you're just trying to stall out round two.
Yeah.
Dropping that buff on after you've already passed. Oh man, that'd be great. You get your skirmishers back up in round two while you're just stalling out and doing setup. Then you put Lugos down and pass. And if he can't catch up in time for that timer to go off, they got to catch up again. So it'd be a good way to bleed people out of card advantage if you won round one as Skellige.
Did we talk about Isengrim, though? I just wanted to quickly just chat about Isengrim.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just because I think that, I think I was checking on Reddit. A lot of people were saying rip Isengrim or rip Skoyatel or he wouldn't function in the same way anymore. And while that's true, he doesn't function in the same way. I actually don't think the deck that you play Isengrim changes very much. I think what changes is you just play him earlier. You'd still have lots of special cards in the deck. You'd still have a lot of Elven Mercenaries, let's say, to help you thin the deck by playing your specials. You would get a lot of benefit from these specials being played. You'd be able to control the board and more likely win the round you play Isengrim on, because he would be very hard to remove as a 6-strength gold. But I still think that the card's good, and I think the card's going to see play. It's just not going to be like an auto win.
Yeah, I actually disagree. I think it's not that Isengrim himself is bad now. I think it's a decent card, but especially because like it synergizes kind of with the mercenaries, especially. But I think it's like the whole class just got hit hard in this patch. Especially like you have the clear skies, for instance. Like weather was one part of the way Skoyatel controlled the board. Then you have tremors, for instance. You can't play tremors in Skoyatel now, because if you play Isengrim still as kind of a win condition, Tremors is going to wreck your own board now, you know? And there's one big change we haven't talked about yet. It's the whole relentless, fleeting permadeath change. So the special cards aren't as strong anymore in this current square tilt. Like, I think you have to completely rework your deck right now. I don't think the deck you have right now is anywhere near viable after the patch.
And we aren't to the point yet where this is going to push an alternate Skoyatel deck forward. Like, I don't think the change to Barclay Elves is enough to make a Dwarven deck viable, nor is the 1-strength bump to Mahakam Defenders. But I feel like you're right, that there's so many changes to Skoyatel in this patch that I don't think there's going to be as many paths to victory anymore. They're not going to be able to stall out in round two by abusing decoy
paths.
Cards.
Like the one path to victory, which is get card advantage and play Isengrim. I think there's going to be more paths. It's just, I think they're going to be less, they're not going to be like paved highways.
Less frustrating for other players.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they could still win without Isengrim.
You might just want to change the suite of special cards you play. I mean, yeah, Stamelford's is out, but maybe, I mean, there are 140 changes coming, right? So it's the whole landscape, I think, is hard. It's hard to talk in general terms when we know that the entire landscape will be changing.
Yeah.
I still think you'd play a largely special card oriented deck with mercenaries and Isengrim, depending on what those special cards may be. I still think that deck is kind of looking the same. Maybe. It remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's hard. It's going to be hard to get away from the way that Skoyatel is able to use special cards. Even when I build my Mahaka Monday deck, it involves a number of mercenaries, a ton of special cards, and commandos to be able to reuse the mercenaries. So it's like you say, we're going to play it sort of the same way, and there's going to be just as many, if not more, paths to victories, but none of them are going to be as effective as Isenbomb and will no longer be.
Isenwind.
So another change, so we can move on to a couple more units we're calling them displacing units. We have two new cards, and then one card that has been changed to allow you to move units around the board. And this is going to be something cool that you know, boards or cards can be moved in and out of weather, and we have at the forefront of this Geralt Ard Guard. What do you think about Guard, Faramir?
I'm actually a huge fan of this change. Like, I was surprised they didn't have this before, like in this closed beta. But I'm a huge fan of them implementing it. It's gonna make weather decks more viable, I feel like, and I think it makes weather accessible to more classes. Mm-hmm. For specific grounds anyway, right? You can't just base your whole strategy on weather, obviously, but I think it's going to make it more accessible. I'm just a huge fan of the idea of just pushing others. Like, that's the whole idea of the rose, right? You can push them around. It doesn't really affect anything other than Like you can set up a better Igni now, for instance, you know, with the push around cards, and it's actually really, really interesting. I'm really looking forward to what it's gonna achieve and like how it's gonna influence decks going forward.
Yeah, like I think that there's some right away there's some application we can see. Geralt Ard pushes things into the weather and then damages them, which could be killing them as well. And I think that was confirmed on the stream. Apologies if that's not exactly true, but. And cards like Coral can save you from the weather by pulling everybody into a specific row, which is kind of asking for some sort of retribution on that row, but it's possible that that is still something you'd want to do, depending on what the meta looks like in weather. And then finally, the awesome flavor of Drowner pushing people into the water. So good. I think that's so, so good. And it's also, as you said before, Drowner being immune to rain is a must-have. So
game
I think
breaking
that,
bug. Game break.
Game breaking bug. Yeah.
Unplayable. Yeah.
We love this change. We love the change to Drowner. I mean, they took a card that the placeholder was so weird and didn't make any sense. A very high strength card that just sat in the rain in the siege row, and they've made it amazing. It pulls cards in the weather. It's itself immune to water, or water. It's immune to rain. And, you know, instead of, you know, chucking boulders during the siege of, you know, what was it, Novigrad, the Siege of Novigrad, we said
yeah,
last
right.
time.
We would yeah. see the Siege Drowners that were operating catapults.
It's a lot better now. It's really cool. It's, so you're a fan of this too, Faramir?
Yes, I am, and especially because one of the things that Hearthstone never did and not doing until now and failing to do is updating the basic set. I really like that mindset that you can rework. That's one of the advantages of online card games. You can always rework the cards without having to like print new editions or whatever that bogs down traditional card games, right?
We did know the Drowner was a placeholder card, and I think there are a couple other ones. I think there is the ranged unit in Northern Realms that's a 7 vanilla, the Light Cavalry. I believe that card also has something else. I think they were just trying to perfect the technology. And in this case, with Geralt Ard and Coral and Drowner, the technology was moving units around from row to row reliably and having players have control over the opponent's board in that way, or their own board, I guess, in the Coral's case. But I think as they develop new mechanical concepts, they'll be able to apply that to some of the cards that are just sort of there. I think Scoia'tael also has one. They had one that was on Xbox only, I think. It was like an 8 vanilla on Siege that the PC didn't have. Such a strange phenomenon.
That's weird.
It's weird. And they also had different names for some of the cards on Xbox. But so I think that any card that maybe seems uninteresting now has the opportunity to be something else as soon as they finalize the mechanic that they wanted to place on it. So I do love that.
And I was thinking that is this the case for every single card but like Redanian Knights? Like
they're
everything else is gonna have like almost any other, if it's less than 8 strength, it's gonna have some kind of cool effect or have some like ability.
There's like another one, there's like Rhyhead Brigade for like monsters or something like that, right?
That's Scoia'tael, like, yeah.
Yeah, they have just a vanilla 7.
There's another one for monsters that's like just 7 attack, second row, just does nothing. But I'm not sure.
Oh, the Vran Warrior. Yeah.
Vran Warrior, that's the name. Yeah.
I think the Fiend and the Redanian Knight, the 8 strength melee, I think they aren't doing, I think those are going to stay the way they are. I'm actually fine with that too, especially in Monster's case. But I think those cards, I think that those are like your silver cards that are just 10, and like Geralt, your gold card that's just 12. I think that those are fine to keep in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then. Yeah, the stuff that's 7, I think, is they have question marks around them. Like, is this their final form?
I mean, there's no point in having an 8 attack card and a 7 attack card. Like, one is just straight up better than the other, right? The only difference is it's a different row, right?
Yep.
That's like, yeah, that's the power creep setting into the close bear. That's not what should happen, right?
Speaking of power creep, what about the buffs to some of these cards?
Yeah, the big buffs. That's the last thing we wanted to talk about in this. So can I lead this off? Because one of my favorites, though.
The big boofs featuring Dane McBeard.
Now presenting big buffs. All right. So I thought that Nithril was a fine card. I thought that his 7 strength was daunting enough, hard to remove in the first place. And when left on the board, does pose a threat. And you know, in a world with like trebuchets doing what they were doing and how they were nerfed, like so Nithril, once again, if, in case you aren't aware, automatically for anybody who's listening, 7-strength silver unit for the melee row for monsters. Whenever a wild hunt unit is played, it pings a random opposing unit for one. Well, now he's 6-strength, but he pings for 2 every time a wild hunt unit comes down. So he is twice as dangerous as he was, but he is susceptible to more removal. But I think even so, I think any card that comes down that the opponent recognizes as, I must remove this card, is a good card because it demands the opponent have an answer. And if the opponent doesn't have an answer, unlike some of the crazy promote strategies in the past where having the answer seemed like you just didn't have it and you will just lose the game. In this case, I think it's fine. If you have the answer, you can at least stop the terror that Nithril will ravage on your board. May not win you the game, but it will be really, really strong position in the round if you can just nuke everything that comes out with your Wild Hunt Riders, Karen Fear, Aradin, Wild Hunt Warriors. So I'm a huge fan of that change. I don't know if anybody else has anything to say about that.
I mean, Radovid just wrecks him though. Yeah.
Radovid does wreck him. Radovid, yeah. You save that, though? I think Radovid's got his eye on Ciri all the time, and I'm very hesitant of Radoviding anything until I have assured to win the
game. No, that's not the case. Like, what's he searching for in the Witcher games? He's searching for the Witcher, right? He's looking for Philippa or whatever?
Yeah, Philippa.
That's true, yeah.
That would have been pretty sick if, like, he's like the number one counter to Philippa in the game. That would have been like a nice lore.
What if instead? Okay, so let me just. We're just going to go right off the tangent here. What if Philippa had the effect of, while on the row, all other cards are reduced to 1?
She'd also have to have 8 strength, though. So rather
than
could
you just kill her. Yeah. So
but
that would be
cool. Who's stronger, Philippa or Radovid?
Well,
which storyline did you choose in the game?
How does it end? In my storyline, whatever. I feel like I don't want to do spoilery stuff.
He likes the Rad Daddy. We know it. Yeah.
Oh, you do? Oh.
Well, no, I didn't realize what I was doing, okay? I didn't know. It's like getting banned from
it was my accident, I swear.
Drugs. I didn't know it was in my drink.
Okay, Peyton.
I don't even know. I have to play the game again. I did a good guy run, pretty much. You know,
good guy run.
Gonna do a bad guy run. Like,
but I do think it's. I know that lore wise, I think that Radovid and Ciri were engaged at one point, but they never actually met each other. So there's no real connection.
Oh,
I think, like no super connection.
I never read the book, so everything I know about the Witcher Witcher lore is the Witcher 3 game, basically.
Yeah.
Back to Gwent discussion. Please.
Back to Gwent discussion, yeah. So yeah, Nithril is Thunderbait, I think, or Alzur's Thunder, we could say. But you'd be running it to stop this card, which means your Ancient Foglets are safer because that's usually what I would use Thunder on against monsters. But yeah, Nithril, really, really good.
That's a pretty good card.
And what about the Skellige discard core? We saw Clan Demon Pirate Captain and War Longship and King Bran all get buffed.
I'm happy.
Is it enough? But I think that's like the burning question that people want to eventually get their hands on to figure it out. I think the War Longship is probably the big one.
I didn't see that one. Just 5 strength. Okay.
Yeah, War Longship just got buffed to 5 strength, and the Clan Demon Pirate Captain is no longer coming down as a 1, which dies to a stiff breeze. Now 3 can't even be pinged by. Anything that pings for 2 isn't quite enough now. It actually demands a full card's worth of removal, I think.
It doesn't die to every Scorytell spell ever. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Yeah, I'm actually quite happy. Like, I think King Bran is still garbage.
He's still hot garbage.
Harold's actually quite interesting now, but yeah.
Yeah, he's been upgraded from steaming dumpster fire to hot garbage.
Pretty much.
He is now no longer the dumpster. He's just in it. I don't agree with that. I'm just going along with the joke. I think that honestly, I think a lot of these changes, we're gonna have to play them first before we can like really.
No,
kind of
that's just like the whole card advantage game. Like, I think 4 base strength, I don't think is enough to make the card good. I don't know.
That's a fair opinion. I think that's an educated opinion as well.
Yeah, I played, and
we are going to be talking about the Skellige leaders still.
He's played card games for a while.
He's been playing for a while, yeah.
Educated
so,
guess.
We do make notes here that a lot of times when they're buffing cards, they buff them by a little bit at a time. just to see what kind of usage increases. So I feel like in the future, King Brand could buff plus four to two units that are discarded. And that might make up for the lack of...
That seems like too much.
It's only eight strength. It's like you lose two card advantage using King Brand.
There's one, right? You dump two cards, you get one.
But you also play the card to dump two cards to get one.
Oh, you're right. So actually do lose...
Yeah, card is like, played.
That's kind of horrible.
That's why you always get caught in your hand in a dumpster fire.
Garbage.
It's like round two and you're down 3-7.
Your leader like, card, it's supposed to help you, not hurt you.
All I wanted was burn on. Now I'm burning.
I guess he's dead for a reason in the game, you know?
Shots fired. Savage.
Why didn't we talk about the whole Relentless thing yet, permadeath, whatever?
Oh, we absolutely can talk about that for sure.
It's a four-hour podcast.
That's important.
That's very important.
That's like my biggest negative of the whole patch.
Tell us your thoughts on it. Tell us your thoughts on Relentless.
Because it's not as much a thing with that I don't like it. It's like as a concept, but I think it's going to be very confusing for players, especially new players, because already we have the whole medic disaster. I don't want to call it a disaster, but the whole medic thing that you can't chain the medics anymore, which I don't think it's like that big of a deal, but they removed it, right? And then you have like class names like elves and whatever, right? So you already have like one factor in that. Then you have the whole rarity thing. You have gold cards, silver cards, bronze cards, and then you have obviously like legendary, rare, epic, whatever. And now you're gonna have then you have special cards, and now you're gonna have another category that you have to look at for cards to that matters, right? For instance, there's some wording on cards now for decoy, for instance, like bounce back, non-golden, non-relentless card back to your hand or whatever. And I think right now it's not that bad, right? It's not overwhelming yet, but if they keep adding these kind of categories, it's gonna like very quick, it's gonna be very confusing for players.
They'll need to have like extra long cards to have the entire description.
And like it needs to be very, very clear visually what kind of cards they are. I think they need to do something visually that it's very clear what kind of cards.
Oh.
If it's Fleeting, Relentless, or Permadeath. I think it needs to be very... Like in Hearthstone, for instance, you have the whole death rattle, you have a little skull on the bottom, and you have... Like if it has like a usage, like with spells, you have a little lightning bolt and whatever, right? It needs something like that on the card. Like you don't have...
Have a ball and chain.
Yeah, it can't be that for instance, right? It can't be that you have to look up the card every time to see what it does. I think that's a very important thing, because for players, for instance, it's like, oh, cool, I have a decoy, I can get that card back. And it's like, oh, shit, it's Relentless, I can't get it back.
Or Milva.
Something like that, right? And I think it's going to be very confusing for new players, and I think... Like, unless it's going to be made visually very clear what kind of cards they are. Like, right now, every card looks the same, right? Unless it's, like, gold. Like, every card is either golden or silver or common, right? That's, like, the only visual guide we have. And for the rest, we have to look up the card.
Well, with one notable exception, and I think this exception is a great example of what you're talking about, when a card is resilient and it will stay on the board, it has that big log that appears at the bottom with the fist, and it's a very strong visual indicator that you know this card isn't going to be leaving the board after the end of the
round. Did they have that yet? I didn't see that.
So like the Mahakam Defenders, anything you play Adrenaline Rush on, Yarp and Zigrin. So if they can come up with something for all of these important keywords, it's really important. I think that they're going to be in trouble with Fleeting, because you don't really have that, you know, the spells don't hit the board. So there's going to be possibly just a nice big indicator. And it's possible that they're still working on that. I remember in the last patch they said there was going to be an indicator for Weather Immune. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there hasn't actually been an indicator added for Weather Immune. So it's possible that they're working on all of these visual indicators and icons, and I hope that they that they come up with a little bit more of an accessible way.
Yeah, I think that has to be, like, if they want to make it accessible to a lot of people and not make it confusing, that has to be a priority. It's going to be very hard to follow if you don't have clear visual indicators. And I hope they're very, aware of that.
Yeah, I'm going to say that, you know what, I'm not going to take any kind of money for this position. I don't want to be paid for my ideas. But ball and chain, make it happen.
And I know that they're already reconsidering. I think that the term that was used for permadeath is already, it's unfortunate because we do know that there are cards that can bring back cards that are permadeath. So hopefully I think that's they're aware of that, and I don't think that the permadeath is going to be something that stays. But
I think the way that you change that is you take cards out of the game. You have another stack of cards next to the deck and the graveyard where cards are on that are out of the game that can't be played again.
I think you've got the graveyard, right. And then you've got like the Freestyle. Void.
The discard.
The void.
The discard pile, whatever, right? Mm. Where you don't call it that because you discard cards, but you know what I mean, right? The out of the game pile, like you have in Magic, where you just put it next to your deck, and you can't interact with it anymore.
Yeah,
makes sense to me.
I have trust that we'll get that sorted out, and I do think that, yeah, like the flame icons really could mean anything at all right now. Originally, though, when we saw like the original kind of pre-beta leak, actually even before the pre-beta leak of when Kill the Servers was announced and we got to do the stress test when a lot of stuff was different, they had a lot of different icons, but they had a different icon for like every single unit. So it was less accessible in a different way, in that you had to know what every single icon meant for it to be workable. So they changed it so there was only one icon, which is kind of on the other side of the spectrum, difficult to understand. So I'm sure it's a work in progress for their design team, for sure. Their art and design team. But I trust them. If they're going to do stuff like they do with Adrenaline Rush right now, have a nice big, like, ka-chung, big fist.
Yeah.
And the
visual indicator, right? That makes it clear, okay, this card does this.
All right, that's cool. Any other comments about the changes that are incoming that anybody might have? Otherwise, we can transition to
I think we about covered it. Like, everything.
Yeah. This feels pretty good.
Yeah,
feels
so I think with this, we want to thank Faramir, our amazing guest. We sincerely appreciate you being a part of our podcast today.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, let us know where you can be found outside of. I'm sure you do some streaming and some content of your own.
I've been streaming a little bit of Gwent recently. I don't stream that regularly. I just don't have that much time because I'm working full time. But every time I find time and people will watch me and talk to me in chat, I always like streaming at twitch.tv/FaramirHS. And like pretty much everything where you want to find me is FaramirHS, Facebook, Twitter, everything. Just tweet at me or follow my stream. It's always good fun.
All right, FaramirHS. Well, thanks so much for joining us for this interview and for this podcast. It was great to have you. And good luck out there. Good luck on the path. And we'll we're looking forward to seeing how you take this new patch and how your experiences go on. We'll keep in touch for sure.
Good luck on the trail, right?
Yeah, good luck. Good luck on the path or the trail.
However, best of luck.
Trail, who knows?
Is it the trail?
We'll see you on the ladder, bud.
All right.
See ya.
Take care. Thanks again. Thanks once again to Faramir for joining us on the podcast, but we would like to move on to some community feedback, so let's address some of that right after this.
All right, and welcome to the community feedback section. We're going to get right into our tweet of the week. This one comes in from Torlan, a good friend of the show. Check out his site, gwentdaily.com. Torlan asks, what do we think of the new card, First Light? We also got another tweet from this from Theo Sky Blue. He wanted to know, is a general reaction. It's great. Clear Skies, a.k.a. First Light, is a lot more reliable now. And while he doesn't feel like weather decks are dead. You just have to value card advantage enough. And I feel like what he's getting at here is that you could get card advantage out of smartly playing First Light, which is probably right, by getting the extra strength on the board.
Yeah, it's a really versatile card, and I think that. And what I said in the interview with Faramir, it's a card that you can have it and you can use it for its purpose of clearing weather. But if you don't have any use for that, it's not dead. It's actually quite good. It helps you thin your deck. And if you know exactly what you can pull, if it's late in the game, you can basically just treat it as having another bronze unit that you would have preferred to have. It is random, so it is a little less reliable to use early, but using it late sometimes can be just exactly what you need. It's a good card. It's very versatile, and maybe too versatile? I don't know. I think it's very good, though. I've been running them in almost every deck right now, but there's been a lot of weather out there, too.
Yeah, you got to feature these cards in most of your decks. If nothing else, they're almost a dart throw when you're just behind and you need something from your deck. Mm-hmm. And you're sure it's in there. It's helpful. For me, I've been using this... I use it in every deck as well. I keep one or two. I've been using three of them in my Skellige deck. I run a Herald deck with moderate discard, so I run like Pirates and Ermion. I don't necessarily run Burna for reasons I've gotten into on past podcasts. But with the Pirates, suddenly no more Pirates are in your deck. And then after Ermion, you might have sent a Skirmisher to the graveyard and maybe something else you don't want. Well, there's not a whole lot of other bronze units in your deck besides Skirmishers, Pirates, and Medics. So for me, running three of these, I can mulligan all of my Medics in the mulligan phase, and when I draw cards, I'm basically drawing either a Medic with the Medic draw, or I'm drawing Medic with First Light. So it's almost like having a duplicate of a card without having to draw it, if you get
one thing. One thing you got to be careful about is if you are using Ermion and Last Wish and even King Bran, if that's your flavor, you do have the potential of throwing the Medics in the graveyard if they're not safely in your hand. That's just the one thing that I would highlight. But otherwise, everything you said is very true.
It's fun to play that way. So, again, we have very strong positive reactions to First Light. We think it's opened up a lot of possibilities with decks, and I know for a fact that it's excellent in the Elves deck. So,
yeah, and it's not one of those things where just because the card exists, it means weather sucks now. You still need the card in your hand. You still need to build a deck with it. You still need to make decisions on how you are going to include that in your deck and how you are going to play it. Now you have choices. So I think that, and especially in my experience on the ladder, weather hasn't gone anywhere. There's a lot of great weather decks and Drowners pushing you around and stuff. It's the existence of the card hasn't changed the need for the card is what I'm trying to say. And yeah, it's a good card. It just feels good to play. It feels good to nail a good bronze unit when you can. And it always feels good to clear weather. So yeah, that's what I got to say. We can move into the email of the week. Email of the week comes from Ruben VDB, friend of the show. He has a question about premium cards and single player. While we don't have a lot of information about single player, maybe this is more speculation on what we might want to see. So his question is, do you think premium cards should be exclusive single player premium rewards? Or would you rather have single premium cards be collectible from kegs, or perhaps see some other rewards from single player altogether? So I think what Ruben is trying to say is, what should come from single player? Like, what will be our rewards for purchasing and playing and going through those quest lines, putting in the hours? And should those rewards be very specific rewards, perhaps premium cards that you couldn't get any other way? And I think the heart of that question is maybe, how do we want to get premium cards? Do you think it's great? Would it be a great idea if we would get premium cards from single player specifically? So I think that's great. I think that being able to get special premium cards, maybe not exclusive premium cards, and by which we're talking about the animated cards that are still coming in a future patch, but every card is going to have a premium version with sound effects and animated models and just absolutely beautiful artwork. But they will be very rare to find, I'm assuming. But if we could procure them from playing the single player in quests, I'm on board with that. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, and I think this is a great question. Thanks for the question, Ruben. Good friend of the show, like we say. We don't know anything about the single-player campaign yet, and that's sort of what's what's leading me into my next part of the discussion, because as we did discuss with Faramir, we think maybe the single-player version of Gwent, or rather the single-player campaign, will be similar to Hearthstone's single-player, which is to say, not very deep. However, this is CD Projekt Red we're talking about. So I have a hard time envisioning a single-player campaign set in the Witcher universe for Gwent that doesn't have side quests, for example. So what if, you know, we do have to complete the single-player campaign for each faction, I believe, to unlock the starter deck and the leader. Is that correct?
I don't know, actually.
I think that's what they mentioned. And if that's the case, then what if there were CD Projekt Red side quests? Because it's, as we say, a Witcher game, and there's got to be side quests, right? So
I just think it's going to be so robust.
It's got to be robust. I mean, this is the developer that we love for their Witcher games. I mean, mm-hmm. It has to be a robust single-player campaign. And if it is, there's going to be side quests. And what if completing all the side quests netted you a premium leader card, for example? Something you couldn't get in any other way unless you got lucky from a pack. And of course, we do know that we got a premium card from playing in the beta, so we get the premium vanilla Geralt. But I think that there is a way to put premium cards in a single player that doesn't make it easy to get, but it also makes it worthwhile to chase.
I think, first of all, I think that they just have such a well of lore that they can create stories from. And I don't think, and there's no limitations on who the story follows. It doesn't have to be Geralt. We do know Geralt. We do know Doug Cockle is lending his voice to some things in Gwent. I believe last I heard it was tutorial based, but it's possible that he has a place in the storyline as well. But there's just so much that's left to explore through the books and through just the general understanding of the world of The Witcher. So I am so not concerned. I think that it's going to be engrossing and very fun. Fanboy alert, but I really do believe that. So, I think that getting a premium leader would be awesome. I think the premium leaders are like really, really good because those are the ones that are on showcase from the very beginning. You open the match with your premium leader and then there it is just chilling right by your score for the whole game. You get to basically like, it's there for the whole game. I like that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, there's so much that is up in the air still, and I think that's why we're not touching single player during the beta, is because they can focus on, in one aspect, balancing the cards out. Like, we're getting mm-hmm. from all these patches and all these changes to cards. And then, you know, they're still working on the single player. It's not even, I mean, I would assume that it's not quite playable yet. Or if it is, it's in such a position that, you know, they're not willing to release it to beta testers, possibly for spoilers, but also possibly because there's a lot they want to do with it.
Yeah, and we haven't really been seeing it talked about in the future of streams or the coming soon notes. They did address a lot of it on the PAX West panel. And if you're interested in our coverage of that, that was actually episode one. You know, it's rough. It's a rough episode, I think. But, you know, the information is there.
Smooth and buttery is your voice.
Well, and it's just me on that episode too, but PAX West is where they showed off a lot of premium cards that we haven't seen yet, some cards and artwork that we haven't seen yet, and of course the single player stuff that we haven't heard much about since. So a lot of that kind of remains in the air of mystery, and I do like that. But yeah, I think that's how we feel about that. And for anybody else listening, if you'd like your questions featured on the podcast, if you'd like to see any features on the show, be a part of the show, any guest you'd like us to reach out to, really anything at all, please contact us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at commandershorn.
Yeah, and before we go, I just want to say that you can also get a hold of me and McBeard on our personal accounts. We, you know, do stream quite often on Twitch. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/grayboxer. And you can also find me on Twitter at grayboxergwent. Where can everybody find you, McBeard?
Yeah, for me, you can find me on Twitter at McBeardCH. CH stands for Commander's Horn. and on Twitch at McBearded. McBearded. So they are two different names, but the beard is the same, you know? So thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thanks to everybody who follows us and keeps up with us over the course of the week. We always have lots of great stuff to say and lots of gameplay to share with you about Gwent. Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to our guest Faramir. And of course, Josh, thanks to you as well, as always.
Hey, thank you. And I want to thank Torlan, Ruben, and Theo Skyblue for the tweet of the week and the email of the week. So thanks, guys. This is Grey Boxer, and for McBeard, and to you all, best of luck
on the path.